This is episode number 8.
Hey, truckers. Pogo here, also known as Paul Konowalczyk Pogorzelski. I live on the Gulf Coast in Goshen, Mississippi. Vicky and I are going on 4 years trekking around in our 2000 Chevy Parpeter 200 and two dogs. Do I like roadtrekking.com? Does spam come in cans? Yes. I can't get enough of Road Trekking RV Lifestyle blog. It's so full of tips, trips, technology, tales, and real trekkers. Later.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendlin and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hey, what is up, road trekkers? How are you today? We've got lots of information for you. We are a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. And whether you have a big RV like a Class A, or whether you travel around a small camper van type RV like the one that Jennifer and I travel in, or a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about getting out there, about enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and tech to enhance our camping experience. That's what Road Trekking, the podcast, is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, all I can say is, brr, it is cold. As episode 8 is being introduced into the internet, the temperatures are cold throughout most of the country. That Arctic vortex that everybody was talking about in the early part of 2014 has come back in November of 14 and dumped massive amounts of snow on parts and portions of the Midwest. And I guess I talked to somebody today up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. This is this show is released. It's about a week or so before Thanksgiving 2014. And up in Marquette, Michigan, they already have 28 inches of snow on the ground. Can you believe that? Much of the Midwest has snow. So all of you snowbirds listening to us in those warmer climates, eat your heart out. I know. I know. That's why you went to the South. Well, it is cold up here. Many of us have put our RV babies to bed. They're all winterized and ready to hunker down and stay out of the cold and snow. Others are like me. We've got ours winterized, but we're planning to take a bunch of trips. We travel every month of the year in our RV, and we'll be heading out again soon. Going to a big RV industry show in Louisville the first week of December. And hey, while I'm talking about that, that's for the industry. It's not a public show, but it's a big show. All the major RV manufacturers are there. They're showing off their brand new products. We'll be there. And there's usually so much news that comes out of there. What we're going to do this year is we're going to do back-to-back podcast episodes. You know, normally we're every Wednesday we come, but the week after Thanksgiving, we're going to come Monday, Tuesday, or no, that's not right. Monday, we're going to go there, and then we'll start with podcast, the opening of the show, which is Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we'll have special editions of the podcast the week after Thanksgiving to kind of give you a hint of what's coming down the pike in 2015. Can you believe that? It's already 2015. We have a lot to talk about today. Our main segment later on the podcast is about work camping. Now, you've seen those folks at campgrounds and some at our national parks that are workers. They get a free place to stay for their RV, often a premium spot, and in turn, they work. They do some general work around the campground or around the park, and there are a lot of them that do that. But there are so many other forms of work camping out there. And if you've ever wondered about it, whether it's more like volunteering or whether you really do get paid, we've got, I think, a really interesting interview coming up later on the program. So you can learn how to get paid for your RVing, how to get your expenses covered and find a free place to stay as we talk about work camping coming up later in the program. I've got you want to stay tuned to this. I have a really cool giveaway. Now, if you're listening to this program early on in the week, because these are released Wednesday mornings, and you've got a shot at being one of five people who need to send me their name and address, and we'll talk about a really cool giveaway, something that I've been testing out for our RV, and it's really neat. I talked to the manufacturer, and I got them to give me five of them that I can give away to the first five people who will send me a little note. We'll talk about that later on. We've got some news coming up. Some national parks are thinking about, guess what, raising their fees. They're having some fun with the bears at Yosemite National Park. And I've got news about a brand new model road trek RV that's going to be on a new chassis. And we'll check that out a little bit later on. I was actually at the Road Trek factory last week in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Road Trek is the number one manufacturer of Class B motorhomes in North America. And, well, I guess I should probably get right to that and play a little report that I did. I go there a lot because, of course, we drive a Road Trek, and the name of the blog is Road Trekking. And so we're always talking about that. But we drive a Road Trek also. Jennifer and I have, for the last 2 years, been in an E-Trek, which is on the Sprinter platform. It's a very cool RV. It's got solar, and it's got lots of extra batteries on duty. But we spent so much time traveling, we realized we needed a couple things bigger, like a bigger refrigerator and, well, some new technology that Road Trek has announced. And so, without further ado, let me just tell you about the big decision we make by playing this report from Road Trek's factory in Kitchener, Ontario.
So I'm in Kitchener, Ontario at Road Trek headquarters, and here's the secret. If you've been following our Facebook group, you probably know that Jennifer and I have been thinking about, do we want to upgrade? Well, the answer is yes, we do. And I'm up here to take a look at the unit that we got that they're now building. Come on in.
This decision to get a new unit has been a long time in the making, but our love of the off-the-grid boondocking that we've been doing and the new innovations in Road Trek technology has led us to this unit. Here it is, a brand new CS Adventurous on the XL, or extended length, Sprinter chassis. Now, it's still being built, but Road Trek President Jim Hamill gave me a sneak peek at what Jennifer and I will soon be driving.
The CS Adventurous has become almost 20% of Road Trek sales. This van, over the last year and a half, has completely taken over the people that want a long-term camp, the people that want to travel in camp, the people who want a boondock. And of course, it's available with the E-Trek option packages. That's taken almost half of the CS sales, where people are taking the huge capacities of the E-Trek and the easy charging methods and the solar and all the extra accessories. And it's just a phenomenal van.
Now, I can't share everything about some of the things that we'll have on this unit just yet, especially when it comes to the lithium batteries and some of the details about the power management system. All that will be revealed in a couple weeks at the big RV industry show in Louisville.
This van has huge, huge capacity of deep cycle lithium battery banks.
Okay, look up here. Check out the solar panels. Way more than we have on our current E-Trek. And how's this possible? Well, the air conditioner's not up there, is it? It's located somewhere other than the rooftop.
You do have a lot more solar. You probably have just 3.5 times more solar than you currently have on your E-Trek. And we're able to accomplish that by looking at entire systems of how we've engineered the van.
Our unit is the new champagne color with an ebony interior. It'll have black leather seats and that XL feature, which adds another almost 16 inches of space on the back. It's really cool. We ordered a new option, a powered rear cabinet that lets you access some of the extra space from inside the coach.
So here she is, our new CS Adventurous. We'll pick this up sometime in mid-December. We'll trade in our E-Trek at American RV in Grand Rapids and drive home with this one. It's going to be quite a Christmas present. Can't wait for 2015.
I'll put a video up, a video version of that report you just heard. I'll link that to the show notes here for this episode, episode 8, and you can actually see it. But it was up on a hoist, and they were frantically working on it, lots of people on it. Lots of neat little things on it, particularly the power system that has to do with those lithium batteries. I'll tell you a lot more about it. The color is kind of a champagne pearl. The thing that, a couple of reasons why we are upgrading like that. One, I do so much off-the-grid camping. We do so much boondocking, and we need a little extra storage because I carry all this gear around. Now, it was bad enough when I had all my TV gear, and then I had my drone so I could get aerial shots of pretty places, and then all of my photography gear, my cameras and my different lenses and all the batteries and the battery chargers. Well, add to that now my podcast studio. I mean, I am now carrying along a portable studio so we can do these podcasts from the road all of next year. And we'll do our first ones from Louisville when we cover that show in a couple of weeks. So I needed more storage. I don't want to keep the, I've got this big stowaway cargo box that I could stick on the trailer hitch in the back of this thing, but I don't like to bring that thing along. So this Sprinter is known as the XL for extended length. You know, Sprinter's Road Trek has the SS, that's the short Sprinter. Then it has the RS, which is the regular Sprinter. This is now the XL chassis of the Sprinter chassis, and it's about 16 inches longer in the back. Doesn't sound a lot, but when you go all the way up the height of the van, and 16 inches gives you a whole lot more of cargo space, and I think I can get all of my gear, all of my podcasting stuff in that space, and I won't have to then take an extra cargo box. I will probably stick on a couple of bikes in the back and on the bike rack, but we're looking forward to that. Plus, it has a big 5-cubic-foot refrigerator, so we can stock up more food, and when we're boondocking out in the woods, it'll last longer. So now it's the hard part. I got to wait for it. They'll be showing this one off at Louisville at the RVIA show that we've been telling you about. So I'll see some more pictures of it there. And then I hope it was left. I can pick it up from Road Trek the week after that. I've got to go to the factory. We want to configure out my unique storage things. And then it's taken to the dealer that I'm getting it through, which is American RV over in Grand Rapids, Michigan, not too far from my house. So I am pretty excited. Jennifer and I think this is going to be pretty cool. It's a Christmas present from us, our brand new RV that we should have in plenty of time for our 2015 travels. Can't wait.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. One of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike. It's Sue. Our RS Adventures appears to have stopped charging the house batteries. Every time we stop, a few minutes later, there's no interior lights. Is there any troubleshooting process that we can use without any meters?
Well, what that normally means, well, it could be two things. It could be probably 100 things. I'm not a technician. I don't even play one on the internet. I am just an RV user. But I can tell you from our experience, Sue, that normally when something like that happens, it's because your batteries got so down in their charge, such a low charge, they were almost completely empty, and they haven't been completely charged again. The way these batteries are all set up and balanced, they need to be fully charged. And the best way to fully charge these batteries is just to plug them in to shore power for, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours. Let them really charge up. What happens is, you know, if you start it, I don't know if you have the engine generator or how you charge your batteries, but you want to make sure they're completely charged. Now, that's not to say that you may not have a bad cell. So if you don't, first thing I would suggest you do is put it in charge. Really stick some shore power on that thing, let it sit there for overnight at least, and get those batteries fully charged. Or take it for a really hard run where you're running the engine, you know, down the road for an hour, 2 hours, something like that. But you want to get those batteries topped off. Usually the problem that you're describing comes about when those batteries just exhaust themselves, and you run it maybe short little distances around town and it just won't hold a charge. So you got to get that charge back up. That said, if that doesn't do it, then you need to probably take it to an RV dealer and check out those batteries. Make sure you don't have a dead cell.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of Road Trekking, the RV podcast, is Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri, serving RV shoppers from the center of the country. This is the place where you can go to find the best selection of Class B RVs, I think, probably anywhere in North America. I mean, these guys have RV Class B RVs from all of the major Class B motorhome manufacturers. They also have new units and a lot of used units. You know how hard it is to find a Class B used in good condition? These guys, if anybody has one, they do. They have them used and new, in stock, on display. Van City loves to deal. They only sell Class Bs. That's what they specialize in from the time they were created. Class Bs only. The owner, Ray Dwyer, is sort of known as the dean of Class B sales. Nobody knows small motorhomes better than he. And Ray and his crew not only stock new models, they have a large inventory of used Class Bs. They have a great fly and drive program. In other words, you can shop, call them up, arrange to pick it up. They'll pick you up. You fly to the airport. They'll pick you up. They'll take care of the cost of your airplane ticket, get you in your new unit. You drive off with that. I've met Ray. I've met Danny and the crew at Van City RV, and they have one of the top service centers in the country. They've worked on my RV, and I can tell you these guys know exactly what they're doing, and you're in good hands. So check them all out. Danny from Van City RV, what do you got for us this week?
Thanks, Mike. Hey, I want to remind your listeners not to miss out on our inventory reduction sale to the end of the month. You take an additional $3,000 off of all remaining 13 and 14 models in stock. We're also stocked up on our used Road Treks. We have 3 210s, 3 190s, and 1 170 all ready to trek. Check them out at vancityrv.com or give us a call at 1-800-467-3905.
That's 1-800, Danny, 467-3905, VanCityRV.com. Make sure that you tell them that you heard about them from Road Trekking, and they'll probably give you a little bit extra off. They're already low price. VanCityRV.com.
With technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Okay, I told you before, I love gadgets. I mean, I really do. I'm a tech guy. I do these NBC technology reports every week. I'll be starting a podcast for that as well sometime in the next couple of weeks so I can just do tech reviews. But as part of that, I get all sorts of cool stuff. And I got a confession to make. I am sort of a flashlight junkie. I just like flashlights. And technology with this LED stuff has just exploded in the flashlight field. And there are so many unbelievably cool flashlights. Now, I guess one of the reasons I like flashlights is we do so much boondocking in our RV. I mean, we are out in the middle of nowhere. There's no power except that we generate in our own little RV. And there's certainly no lights, no coach power there from an external source, only what you generate. And I love to get outside. I love to do hiking at night. I like to sit around and look. But I also like to have a good flashlight. And the one I found this time is really cool. It is officially known as the Night Stick. And it is a dual light flashlight. And it has dual magnets. And why would you use magnets? Well, you can slap them on something so that you can do some work with them. But it is really cool. These things, they're LED, but they are unbelievably powerful. They're rated at 130 lumens. And they've got this very high efficiency, deep parabolic reflector that's built into them. And it thus creates this flashlight beam. You have to see this thing to believe it. It has an effective flashlight range of almost 600 feet. Almost 600 feet. For you Canadians, it's 181 meters. Additionally, built into the handle of this thing is a floodlight, 110 lumen floodlight. Now, unlike a flashlight beam, the beam coming out of the floodlight doesn't have a reflector, so it spreads out in a very wide, even, unfocused pattern of light. So that's perfect for like lighting up things that are close. Like if you're, say, backing into a spot at night and you want to make sure everything is set up right and hooked up right, you flop that on. You can use the magnets on it to slap it on the vehicle and it'll light up a big area. So you can see everything. It's like turning on an overhead light, like a night light on the farms that you see. I mean, it's really bright, 110 lumens for the floodlight. You can run individually as the flashlight with this big beam that you focus that can go out 600 feet almost, or you can run both of them, the flashlight and the floodlight. So you can have both a focused beam, and then you can have very versatile lighting options, or you can just run the floodlight. It's waterproof, which is really nice because so many times it seems I'm out there in the middle of the rain getting my campsite set. It is impact and chemical resistant. It's bright orange, so you're not going to lose it. These are very tough little lights, and they sell for, I have a link to Amazon, to my affiliate link for Amazon, but they sell for about $32 or so, and they're really, really neat. But here, and they've, oh, they're powered with, that's another thing I like about them. They're powered with three AA batteries. That's all you need, three AA's. You don't have to have those great big C's or D's or some kind of weird, batteries that you don't stock. These are three AA premium batteries that come with the kit. So it's like $32. Sometimes you can even get a better deal. You can check out that Amazon link. But I got the great deal for the first five of you. The first five of you, if you call this in, you don't have to call it in, if you send me a note, send me an email saying, I'd like that flashlight. That's all you got to say is, I'd like that flashlight. And the first five emails I get, you got to send me your address. So make sure I have your address, your mailing address. The company has promised me that they will give the first five people I give them their names to, they'll give them a flashlight. They'll send them one. You do not have to worry about this. It will be shipped directly to you. And I think that's pretty cool. So there you go. Five free flashlights to give away. Just send me an email and say, I want that flashlight. Here's my address. And then the company will send you one. If you want to check this out, look under the show notes here. For this podcast, I have a direct link to our Amazon affiliate. That means if you buy it through Amazon, I get a tiny little commission. It's not very much, but it helps pay for all of this stuff. Every little bit counts. And it doesn't change the price of what you pay it on. It just helps me out a little bit. But I don't ever recommend anything that I don't use. And I've got this flashlight. I'm sitting here with it right now, playing with it. If you could see me. Maybe I should do this podcast in video as well. We'll have to figure that out, see if we can come up with that. But anyway, this one is the Nightstick flashlight, and you can learn more about it at the website. And the first five people who send me their information will get one free. How's that for our tech tip of the week?
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog. News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle. Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, every year, 4 million people visit Yosemite National Park. And one of the reasons that is such an awesome place to go is because you are so close to spectacular scenery and lots of wildlife. But sometimes that wildlife can get a little close, with bears wandering into the campgrounds looking for food. So what's happened is, although the number of incidents involving bears has generally been dropping over the past decade and a half or so, this past year, there was an uptick in bear-human incidents. And so the park has come up with this new tool, and I pass this on because I bet we see this now in Yellowstone and Glacier and other parks where bears often wander into campsites. we were at Glacier this year, and we had three bears wander through it, separate incidents in one day in the campground we were in. But anyway, what they've done, what they're trying at Yosemite is they've put GPS collars, global positioning satellite collars on the bears so that wildlife biologists can sort of track the movements. They've got them on nine bears. And the idea is to see where they are, and then they can run in and try and get them out of the campground if that's the case. But to better manage them, they can locate the animal. They can get it out of an area quickly, says one of the biologists who's been working there. And they patrol at night, and they're looking for various bears that seem to get a little bit too close to humans. So watch that. That'll probably happen in many different national parks as Yosemite pilots this program of putting GPS collars on bears. Since we're talking about national parks, I just mentioned Glacier. Up at Glacier, which is just a spectacular park, that's where we spent a lot of time this summer and just fell in love with it. If you could see me here in my studio, I am surrounded by photos I took at Glacier, including a photo of a bear. Jennifer and I were hiking a trail, and we had a mama bear and her cub literally walk out of the brush. They were in a creek 15, 20 feet from us. And we stopped, didn't move. I had my camera, and they kind of walked across this little trail, this hiking trail. And the cub kind of stuck around eating berries. And so I got some great photos of the cub. And then we backed off and made sure that we weren't too close to them. But anyway, Glacier's an awesome place. But, well, you know, somebody sees a way to make some money because the public is now invited to comment on Glacier National Park's proposal to increase entrance fees. Now, this, they say, is the first time in 9 years that they've had a proposed entrance fee hike. They want to raise the summer vehicle 7-day entrance fee from $25 to $30. And for those of you who visit in the wintertime, they want to raise that from $15 to $20. The cost of an annual pass would increase from $35 to $60 at Glacier. So if approved, those higher entrance fees would take effect in May of 2015. Glacier also wants to implement a motorized boat launch fee and increase the camping fee at many Glacier campground. That's my favorite campground, by the way, anywhere. There's many Glacier campground in Glacier. So there you go. I'm going to cost you more to enjoy Glacier. They want public comment, but you know, I am sure the public's going to say, no, leave it the same. And I am equally sure that they're going to raise it. But I have nothing but a supporter of our national parks. So go for it. Many Glacier campground. If you've not stayed there at Glacier National Park, man, do so. Awesome place. Okay, and now we've got something else to talk about. This was picked up at my, and this news was picked up during my visit to the Road Trek factory in Kitchener, Ontario. You know, there's pretty much all of the Class B and most of the Class C but most of the Class Bs are on either the Chevy Express Van chassis or the Ford chassis or the Sprinter, the Mercedes Sprinter chassis. But as we have seen new vehicles coming out, new types of cargo vans, RV manufacturers have taken notice. And at Road Trek Motorhomes in Kitchener, Ontario, they have been looking at a possible entry-level RV that's a little bit less expensive than the rest of their fleet. And they've settled on a brand new chassis. And they're going to announce it officially at the RVIA show in Louisville in 2 weeks. But while I was there, they let me take a look at it. It was under construction, so it wasn't completely finished at all. But we can announce that it's on the new Ram ProMaster chassis. And here is an excerpt of what we saw. I'll also put a link to a video on it in the show notes. But Road Trek, you heard it here first. Exclusively, we can report they're going to be building a new model that they'll unveil in Louisville on the Ram ProMaster chassis. Here's my report.
So we're at the Road Trek factory in Kitchener, Ontario, and we're kind of snooping around looking for new stuff and found out that they're going to be introducing a brand new Road Trek model at the big RVIA, the industry show in Louisville, Kentucky, the first week of December. We didn't get as much as we'd like, but we got more than we thought, and we can confirm that this is going to be that brand new model.
It's built on the Ram ProMaster chassis, a solid cargo van that will join Road Trek's Chevy and Mercedes Sprinter-based motorhome fleet. We got an early preview at the Road Trek factory, where the first unit was in the process of being assembled. Road Trek President Jim Hamill shared some of the details.
We're trying to achieve a price point in a camper van that gets people to the marketplace for a lot less lower price than the current market demands for a sophisticated camper van. We're achieving everything that a Road Trek has as far as fundamental ability to camp, for boondocking, for all the fundamentals of the best Class Bs in the world. And we're going to do so at a price point of about $80,000, $79,000 to $80,000 MSRP for a base model. We always look at the models that we buy at cargo vans, and we want Class Bs to be under the radar. We want the Road Trek to be the vehicle that no one knows is an RV in their neighborhood. No one knows is an RV when you're downtown somewhere. No one knows is an RV when you're in a beside the highway parking spot. So, well, we've gone and looked at what cargo vans have, and typically they have that big black, ugly bumper look, and we've tried to achieve some new trim looks, some obviously paint finishes, and in general, we've looked at styling as critical for this van, just like all of the other Road Trek vans.
There are a lot of options and features that will be available on this new model when it's announced at the Louisville show, but I couldn't help but notice these powerful, long-lasting lithium batteries ready to be installed in some sort of configuration. And up top?
Well, up top on this van, you're going to have solar as an option. You're going to have air conditioning. You're going to have power awning. You're going to have, maybe some... Maybe other people's vans won't be as nice looking as ours are on top. Maybe you'll see some aesthetic changes to lighting and things that make the van look less industrial. It's brand new. Everything right from the ground up on this model has been designed differently. There is not one thing that's been carried over from a different model.
What made you so excited about this ProMaster chassis?
The ProMaster chassis is a very interesting chassis. It has a great price. It has some very, very interesting characteristics from a drivability perspective. It's front-wheel drive, has a very tight turning radius. It's easy to park and drive, which matches our entire philosophy. It's another great chassis on top of our existing Sprinter and our Chevy Express van. Another great chassis. And then we've gone out and looked at things that we never did before. We've never achieved a van that a family could use effectively and a family could store their toys in. And that's what this van accomplishes.
What we still don't know is the name of this new model. That will be revealed, as well as the completed vehicle, at the big Recreation Vehicle Institute of America show in Louisville, Kentucky, the first week of December.
And I'm going to be there. We are going to actually be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday following Thanksgiving with special podcast. Each, they'll be later in the day. Those podcasts will be released, but you can listen to them at night and during the next morning. So we'll be highlighting some of the things that are happening there, and I think you'll get a kick out of following that along. Another chassis being used for RVs. This is a little smaller and $79,000, $80,000 starting for a Class B that's all customized with everything you need. One of the things it has really cool is you can actually store a couple of bikes in the inside of this thing as you're traveling. There'll be a mount. You'll see how that will work. I think we'll be able to get some really good shots of that in Louisville. And you can even put a kayak in that thing. So we'll have lots of pictures and videos, and our podcast will all be coming up from Louisville as we do some special editions the first week after Thanksgiving. Have you ever wondered how it would be to live full-time in your RV but work as well? Well, that's the way it is for a whole lot of people. As many as 500,000 people are in one way or another a work camper. We had a real interesting conversation with Steve Anderson. Steve is the CEO and president of Work Camper News, and that is a special online site that kind of matches work campers and employers all around North America. Steve tells us that the jobs that are available are a lot more than just the cleanup work that you see at campgrounds, that everything from professionals to retirees just looking to kill a few hours as a volunteer are finding free places to stay and sometimes making some money to help ease those expenses. Here's my interview with Steve Anderson. Joining us now is Steve Anderson. He is the owner and the president, the editor, the chief, everything with Work Camper News. And I think our listeners are going to really enjoy this segment. Steve, thanks for being with us on this edition of the Road Trekking Podcast.
You're welcome, Mike. Glad to be with you.
Let's start off by talking about what is a work camper.
Well, simply put, a work camper is someone who travels and lives in their RV and works. And that could be at a multitude of different types of jobs, everything from folks working in, a lot of people think it's just folks working at campgrounds, but that's not just the case anymore. Folks, yes, they work in a lot of campgrounds, national parks, state parks. We have employers that utilize our membership. Companies you've heard of, like Amazon, for instance, hires a lot of work campers this time of the year to be Santa's helpers, to help fulfill all those orders that Santa Claus is shipping out between now and Christmas.
So the allure for an RVer is basically you can live in your RV and earn a living. You don't have to be completely retired to do that.
That's very true. Very true. You know, of course, the economics are as long as people work out their budget, and you usually will not find a lot of the work camping opportunities are going to be your higher paying type of opportunities. They're going to usually range between your minimum wage to $12, $13 an hour type of thing. But many times what they'll do is they'll work out some type of a deal with you on the camping. And for those folks that are RVers out there listening, they know that if they spend much time traveling in an RV, those nightly camp costs can mount up, and so has some major impact on their economics.
Describe for us the typical work camper, age-wise, demographically, and maybe what kind of an RV they happen to be in, and the kind of work that they do.
Okay. All right. Well, our average age of our work camper member has actually dropped over the last few years with the influx of the the large boomer population that's retiring now. And we're at about 58 as an average age.
So before the traditional retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, a lot of the boomers, depending upon their experiences that they've had from the standpoint of the career environment they've been in, they're able to do some of those early outs and to retire at an earlier age than your standard 62 or 65. And what we find, the bulk of the membership that we have when we do our surveys, they're traveling usually either in a motor home of some type, and that could be the larger Class A's or the Class C's, or the fifth wheel. And if they're living full time, what they're doing is they're looking to have as much footprint for a home as they can. And the fifth wheels do a very nice job. If you've seen them out on the road now, you'll see that they're not uncommon to see those 40-foot fifth wheels going down the highway being pulled by a pretty good-sized pickup.
Now, on the other end of the spectrum, I've seen folks at some of the national parks that are in Class Bs, and they also often even have a cabin or a motel type of a place to live, and they use the RV to sort of travel all around and enjoy it that way.
That's right. You betcha. Yeah, there's perspectives in both directions. But on average, what we find when we survey, it's we do have a few members that actually, do the bumper pole where you'll see like the Airstream, something in that line. But the book of the percentages are your motorhomes and your fifth wheelers.
No.
And the other part, go ahead.
What kind of work do they do? We're familiar with the campground hosts and the campground workers. I think most of us, if we've been on the RV road for a while, we've often seen work campers that way. But as you said at the beginning, that's just one of many different types of work that folks can do while they travel in their RV.
That's right. I mentioned earlier that Amazon's utilizing work campers in some of their fulfillment centers, that they're in areas where they don't have a large population to draw from for their seasonal help, so they'll bring additional help in during the Christmas rush. We've got some of the unique ones that I always enjoy talking about. For instance, the state of Florida, every few years, they will hire work campers to help with gator counts that they do in certain counties of the state of Florida.
Counting
the Florida Fish and Game.
Counting alligators, you said?
Alligators, yeah, exactly. Counting alligators.
And I hope they have all 10 of their fingers to count. You can recognize these guys. One, two, three. Whoop, I lost that finger. That gator.
They don't want you to get down there in the water with them like that. You know, they're looking for head count. We've got other ends of the spectrum. For instance, there's a lighthouse called the Battery Lighthouse, which is in Crescent City, California, and they hire work campers for a shorter duration as 1 month to come in and to do. It's a historic lighthouse, and they have them function as a docent, giving tours of the lighthouse, and they provide that person with a campsite right on the coastline overlooking the cliffs up under the ocean. It's a beautiful area. And, you know, just like you were saying, we have a lot of campground operations that utilize work campers, but we also have national park operations. We have many work campers that work in the national parks, Yellowstone National Park, especially during the summer months, Yosemite, Glacier, and, you know, those types of jobs. And sometimes they're working in their stores. Sometimes they're working for, like, the Yellowstone Association, doing tours of the park, functioning as docents. Best way to put it, I think, is to share with folks that work camping opportunities, many of them that are out there, are going to be service-related, a lot of them having to do with helping individuals that are enjoying themselves living the RV lifestyle, traveling about the country and being involved in service type industries.
Now, this is, of course, the downtime for many RVers, except for the Amazon workers who are busy fulfilling holiday orders. When do you apply for a job, and how do you find these work camping opportunities?
Well, of course, we at Work Camper News, this is our 28th year of operation. We publish a bi-monthly magazine that we have roughly about 7,000 different employers that we work with over the years, and they'll run advertising that we actually publish in our print magazine. And we have a daily hotline that goes out. We have a lot of employers that really like the speed at which the internet can provide access to individuals. So folks can learn about job opportunities as fast as within just moments, literally, if they have it set up so that we submit an RSVP to their phone, for instance. And we have employers that will never advertise and actually will search our resume database. And we have thousands of our members who have the resumes that are actively stored in our resume database. And that employer sits down, does a search of that database to determine, you know, if there's anyone in that geographic area that meets their need. And a lot of times the employer will contact the work camper and they start the communication process. Most of the time it's an interview or interviews done over the telephone. And very few of them, because of the fact that, you know, the applicant might be literally a couple thousand miles away, they're not going to require you to come and do a face-to-face. There are just a very small number of employers that will not hire without a face-to-face. The majority of them are pretty flexible.
So now,
with video Skype, especially now, it's pretty easy.
Sure, you could Skype right on and look at the person and get a great feel for them and the opportunity. Now, for somebody that's just starting out, somebody who has been maybe RVing for a while, and you know, I'd like to try this. Gives us something to do. Gives us a place to go. Give us how far in advance should they check? How long are they expected to work? Are they able to pretty much write their own ticket and plan out a year's worth of travel or a season's worth of travel? How does it work?
Well, we encourage our members through some of our training that we do with them, especially if they're a brand new dreamer, just getting started, We're going to encourage them to learn how to go through the process of applying and go through the steps of learning what to ask and that type of thing. And we encourage our folks to get a year scheduled out and then to start working on their next year, not necessarily firming up an opportunity, but actually starting to do their homework and to determine geographically where they would like to be, and then start looking for opportunities in those areas and spending some time, even communicating with past work campers that have worked at those facilities, you know, to get references of what the experience is like, you know, that type of thing. And so there's many of our members that have, they've got their next 2 years planned out, and there are employers that will actually do interviews for folks that far out. It's kind of unique. A lot of the employers, it gives them the ability to have a little more confirmation of what their future employment situation is going to be like.
What kind of work do they do? You know, we know, I suppose, some maintenance and some cleaning, but also there's customer relations. What are some of the jobs that you've seen cross the Work Camper News desk? And by the way, I'll put a link up to Work Camper News, and folks can go to your website and check it all out. But what kind of jobs do they do? How hard do they work? How many hours a day? I mean, many of these people are RVing to get away from work, and yet they need to spend a couple of hours. But what do they do?
Yeah.
How hard?
Well, you're going to find the gamut there, Mike. You know, I tell folks probably one of the most physically demanding jobs are those jobs at Amazon, are advertising, because they're looking for individuals that will put in a 40-hour week, you know, during the prime time season. But what you're going to find a lot of employers doing is there may not be any income actually involved. It might be a barter situation for 15 hours a week, trade out for that campsite. I mean, if it's a full hookup campsite, then depending on where it's at, you know, we ask our members to evaluate that to see if it's a reasonable program. They are working in, for instance, I'm in a campground called Hill Country right here in New Braunfels, Texas, right now, outside of San Antonio. And they just had some work campers coming by with their mowing machines and all that good stuff, doing ground maintenance. If you go down here to the office, that office is staffed with work campers who are checking the folks in, using Campground Master software. And literally, this operation here is pretty much run by work campers. And you're going to find that in a lot of the campgrounds across the country. But, you know, other types of, there's folks that get involved, and we have a number of folks, for instance, that are, let's say they're accountants in the past, bookkeepers in the past. They will travel to certain parts of the country, and during tax time, they'll work for H&R Block, some of the different tax preparation companies, and so on. So it's an open gambit, if you really think about it. When people try to pigeonhole it too tightly and think, well, okay, I don't know if I could really be a work camper. Well, I ran into a guy the other day who's camped in this campground, and he's working at Walmart. And I said, so you're a work camper? He says, no. He says, I'm not a work camper. I says, you're living in an RV and you're working. You're a work camper.
You know, I would think if I was an employer, this would be a great opportunity to find people who are reliable. I mean, they're in their age group. They're not working because they're desperate for money, but they're working because they want to work. And it seems like that's a great opportunity for a lot of employers, non-campground type employers who are looking for you know, folks that they can bring on for a month or 2 months, or even, I suppose, even longer if you want to stay. But what are some of the things that work campers should bargain for? A free place to stay? You say the money isn't great, but it's something. What are the negotiables that are involved in a work camping employer-employee relationship?
Well, you hit on the two key ones. You know, the first one would be what's the situation for my, you know, where I'm going to be living? What's the environment like, you know, that they're going to have the work camper living in? You know, there are some situations where the operation will provide some of the premium sites for their work campers, and there's others where they don't. So you need to determine right from the get-go, you know, what that is going to be. If it's a pay situation, then of course I always tell folks, they say, well, I would like the pay to be a little higher. It never hurts to negotiate. And sometimes employers have negotiating room, especially if there's experience that people are bringing to the table. Give you some examples of, we have a number of employers in the Branson, Missouri area. And some of those employers will provide perks such as tickets to shows. You visit with many of those work campers that have worked in the Branson area, and they say, you know, I saw 25 different shows during the time that I was there, and they didn't pay a dime to see any of them. And so, you know, there are different perks depending on what the operations have, you know, that they can provide. And many of the employers do just that, where they will, for instance, we have an amusement park in Iowa that will coordinate different events for their work campers during their quiet, their part-time season when they're just weekends only, and they'll have different events and so on that they put on just for those work campers to go and enjoy. So just different types of things, and some of the employers will utilize those perks to advertise with. A lot of times they don't. They advertise what the opportunity is because they want the people interested in coming to their geographic location to do the type of work that they're talking about. And then as added carrots, so to speak, they'll share with them, well, we have these perks, these perks, these perks. And sometimes, you know, that makes a total difference. But the big thing is, what's my camping cost going to be? Am I going to be able to economically live in that area? Also, they're going to be looking at how far geographically it is away from their current location. There are just a handful of employers that have actually started providing like some end of season bonuses to help with fuel costs, you know, things like that. And but that's smaller in number. I've not seen too much of that. I'll give you a little bit of a flavor.
Steve Anderson from Work Camper News, thank you for your time, and we'll see you out there.
All right. Thank you very much.
The Good Sam Club was created over 50 years ago to help folks like you and me get the most out of our RV travels, and today they have over 1.5 million members, and the club provides resources that you need, as well as a friendly community to back you up in making the journey that much more fun and exciting. Good Sam Club is well known for saving RVers money, lots of money, with member discounts and RV accessory discounts and installations and campgrounds and even fuel discounts. Good Sam helps you keep more money in your wallet. Good Sam is also there to help support you on the road, offering services like roadside assistance and warranties and insurance and much more, all designed by RVers like you. When you join Good Sam Club, you gain access to free publications and expert technical advice, how-to videos, and a library of articles that make RVing easier. Good Sam gives you the opportunity to learn more about RVing so you can get the most out of your time on the road. With over 1.5 million members, Good Sam Club lets you do more than just share the road. You become part of the largest RV community anywhere, where members connect to share information and offer advice and meet up for social events, even volunteer together. Good Sam Club is about more than just savings, too. It's about community, helping your fellow RVer, getting support while on the road, and learning more about RVing. Good Sam Club, good friends, good fun, great savings. Join today.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Joining me now with our bucket list destination of the week is my wife and traveling companion, Jennifer. Hello, my dear. Where are we headed?
We are headed to the Colorado National Monument. And unless you've been there, you probably think it's a statue of some sort. At least that's what we thought. Our daughter introduced us to the place and said that we had to go there, so we made it a must during our road trekking family vacation to 2013.
Yeah, that's when we took the whole family. We pulled a trailer for our daughter and her family. Our son Jeff followed in another RV behind us, and I remember when she said we were going to the Colorado National Monument, I figured, oh boy, we're going to go look at statues, but it's nothing like that at all. It's stupendously beautiful. It's this long stretch of spectacular rock monoliths that are cut into sandstone and even some granite rock formations. There's these sheer walled Red Rock Canyons, and they follow a really cool drive that we took called the Rim Rock Drive. It goes up and down and through this preserve for 24 miles.
That's what the Colorado National Monument really is. It's a preserve located just west of Grand Junction, Colorado, and south of the mountain bike mecca of Fruta. It offers panoramic views of towering red rock structures with almost 24 spots to pull over for photos. There's a lot of hiking trails as well.
Yeah, we stayed in the, there is a campground there. It's a primitive campground, but we stayed in the James M. Robb Colorado River State Park. And if you're thinking about going there, we really like that. We love Colorado State Parks. Now, this one is a quarter mile off I-70 at the Fruta exit. And as Jennifer said, that's a big mountain bike place. A lot of people love to do mountain biking there. The park has, the state park has five sections, but only the Fruta section where we stayed and the Island Acres location about 50 miles to the west offer camping. And then from the Fruta campground there, the National Monument's just a half mile down the road. And there's also a dinosaur museum right next door to it.
It takes about 2 hours to see all the major sites on the Monument Drive, though 3 hours is probably more like what you really need to see everything.
The campground that I told you was on site there, it's got 80 sites on it, but no electric or water hookups. And something that we would have probably stayed there in our e-trek because we are pretty well self-contained, but our newbie son and our daughter and their families, that was their first time camping. So we stayed where we could get the electrical hookups. But Jennifer and I, we would have stayed at the campground right on the preserve, I think, right on the National Monument. But,
yeah, if we ever go back again, we got to make sure we do that.
Yeah, but we have no complaints about the Colorado State Parks. Like I said, we're very impressed with the ones we stayed at.
We did our drive through the monument about mid-afternoon. We found a great Mexican restaurant in Fruta with an outdoor patio that let all of us eat there. And they, I don't know if we should say it or not, they're even kind enough to let our dogs be tied up at our feet.
Yeah, they gave us a little patio area and they said we could keep the dogs there under the table. Of course, we kept sneaking them food.
Well, usually we have to take turns babysitting the dogs. So it was very nice to be able to have our dogs with us. But they told us if anybody came and complained about the dogs that we'd have to leave.
So there you go. We didn't have to leave. We got some great food. The dogs got lots of leftovers. And now you know that the Colorado National Monument is not a statue. It's a place run by the U.S. Park Service. It's just like a national park. And I think there's a movement underway to actually make it a national park. It certainly is a beautiful enough place.
It certainly is.
So there you go. We'll put pictures up of what we saw along the way and a link to all of the information we just shared under the show notes with this episode. Thanks, Jen. That's our destination of the week.
Oh, this makes me want to go back.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, there we go. That's another episode of Road Trekking, the RV podcast, episode 8. I hope you are enjoying them half as much as we are enjoying producing them. It's really been a lot of fun, especially interacting and getting the messages from so many of you as you share your RV experiences and your questions. You do that, if you don't remember, by clicking the Leave Voicemail link. It's on the right-hand side of the roadtrekking.com website. Just click that. You use the microphone in your computer, and you can record a message that comes straight to me. And we put questions and comments and all the feedback we get, that's often a part of our podcast. So we want to encourage you to keep sending those in. Something else I want to thank you again for, those of you who have taken the time to give us a review and to rate this podcast. The many five-star ratings you've been giving us on the iTunes site has certainly helped. We've had over 152,000 downloads of this podcast in the last month. And so much of that is because we've become very visible on iTunes, and that is because you've taken the time to review it. So please do. It helps people know that people want RV news. Next week, I'll have some information on some other podcasts that you may want to listen to that are all about RVing and travel. And I welcome your suggestions. Anybody you think we should interview, who we should talk to next, just let us know. We're always looking for RV news and the things that interest you. We're not so much covering the industry here as we're covering a lifestyle. And like we said at the very beginning, whether you live in a big Class A or a Class C or a small camper van type Class B motorhome like Jennifer and I use in our road trek, or whether you're a tenter or a camper or just thinking about it, this podcast is for you. It's really not so much about the machine. It's about the lifestyle, about getting out there and enjoying God's creation and seeing the beauty of North America. I hope you have a great 2015, and I hope this podcast is helping you find some bucket list suggestions. We'll be back every Wednesday with a brand new edition. Don't forget, the week after Thanksgiving, we'll have three podcasts back to back, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the week of Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving. That'll be coming from Louisville, Kentucky, in the industry trade show for the Recreation Vehicle Institute Association. We'll have lots of stuff about new trends in the RV business. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Steve Anderson from Work Camping for helping us understand all about that. Till next time, I'll see you out there road trekking across North America. Bye-bye, everybody.